will sound an alarm of warning to multiple organs, letting you know to reconsider the safety of your situation. It is possible that those of us who have experienced trauma may have a lifelong distorted vision, a blindness toward knowing what a safe family is. If we've had an abusive one, we may not be able to accurately see a safe relationship if we've had a series of abusive ones. And we may have a similarly myopic visual incapacity to see what could be vocationally possible if we've had a series of jobs in which we've had abusive bosses or even been fired. So, what do you do if the memory circuits in your brain and body have been altered by trauma? In addition to the solutions in the following section, you may, like anyone who has physical blindness, borrow a pair of eyes for that area of your life. You may, for the rest of your life, need to borrow someone's perceptivity and wisdom in seeing what is a healthy group of people to be in. You may need the balanced perspective of a coach or psychotherapist, like a seeing eye dog, to help guide you and support you to choose appropriate mates and careers. Is it possible, through psychotherapy and working through our issues, that we can say to ourselves, by now, after decades of making the same relationship or career mistakes, I should be able to choose more wisely? Perhaps. There are two ways of looking at this. Until you get there, you may still need the visual support of a counselor to help guide you to make the correct choices, because if you continue to make the wrong, trauma-inducing choices, you drive memory problems further into your brain and body. However, in people who have the most severe traumatic paths, science shows us that there may be a more extensive rearrangement of visual and memory circuits in their brains for recognizing relationships and opportunities accurately. So part of aging wisely is to accept one's limits gracefully as one learns to acquire new talents. For example, Stevie Wonder is blind and in his 70s at the time of this writing. Perhaps his blindness in his brain may have made him lose visual capabilities, but develop lifelong savant gifts for melody and musical genius. The man is blind. You wouldn't think he would say, any day now, through the right amount of psychotherapy, I'm going to see because I've worked through the problem. That opens up another whole can of worms. We can deal with trauma's effects in our brain and body and perhaps even eradicate, cure, heal, and remove certain illnesses. However, we can never really remove our memory of its effects on our life, traumatic or otherwise. Having experienced all of those events, painful or otherwise, affects our brain and may, in fact, impact our memory in just the way we're talking about in this story. So, accepting what has happened to you and loving yourself for the person you've created to endure the trauma, the only way you're going to help your memory is to accept help. Consider the following questions to find out if you've experienced anxiety and trauma that affects your memory circuits. Emotional symptoms. There have been long periods of time in your life when you've experienced nervousness and worry to such a level that you can hardly stand it. There's been an event or events in your life in which you've experienced such terror that you wondered how you would survive. There's been an event or events in your life in which you've watched the tragedy of a close loved one experiencing horrific trauma and felt powerless and guilty because you couldn't help them. Body symptoms. Since you can remember, your body has had hot flashes and cold chills. Since you can remember, you've had episodes in which your chest tends to pound. You've had long periods of time in your life where you've had problems with dizziness and lightheadedness. For long periods of time, you've wondered if your nervous system was keyed up. Your body felt trembling, shaking, sometimes numbness and tingling. For most of your life, it's been hard for you to swallow pills. And you get a lot of side effects from medicines, herbs, and nutritional supplements. Only you can determine how many of the previous symptoms of nervousness and anxiety may be making it harder for you to remember. If you are a high-strung person who has emotional and intuitive hypersensitivity, your edginess and tension may make your memory perform less efficiently than it can. Anxiety, however, may be only one component of what is making you struggle to have efficient, sharp memory. After you hear the following case, listen to the other sections in this chapter as well, as they may help you find other solutions to utilize all of your intellect and wisdom. Terry, trauma and memory. Terry 58 called me complaining she couldn't remember anything. She said her brain was in a fog. The intuitive reading. When I looked at Terry's life, I saw that after she lost a loved one in her life, she seemed to always be nervous about being alone. Was it a parent? Did someone just up and leave the family? Whatever it was, it seemed that Terry's brain and body had a hypervigilance, a twitchy sense that the world was not safe, and at any time someone could just go poof, and leave her. And now recently, it seemed like her life was on instant replay of this trauma. Someone had again left Terry. This in itself wasn't a tragedy, but it seemed to be compounded because it reminded her of that early separation in her life. It felt like Terry had experienced emotional whiplash. The body. When I looked at Terry's head, I saw problems with focus and attention. Were these due to hormones? Were they due to panic? I saw pressure in her chest. It was hard to take a deep breath. It seemed that addiction ran in the people around Terry. Was it alcohol? Food? I wasn't sure. I saw subtle changes in estrogen, progesterone, and cortisol and insulin that made her brain fog worse. Finally, I saw sadness and problems falling asleep and staying asleep. The facts. Terry worked as an interior designer, and it was taking her longer and longer to complete her projects. People were beginning to complain. She couldn't keep to her schedule and was starting to forget some of the details of her assignments. Her mother had died of breast cancer when she was 4, and recently her father had died suddenly of a massive heart attack. Terry told me she could remember very little of her childhood, so she really didn't think the death of her mother was that much of a problem. She did admit that she had been in recovery for alcohol for 20 years, having used it for anxiety and insomnia. Recently, she was in perimenopause and was having trouble sleeping. Having had lots of problems with relationships, she always thought the only thing she could really trust was her success in work. But recently, that too was failing her. The solution. If you have had serious trauma in your life, you may have been diagnosed with PTSD, anxiety, depression, and maybe even ADHD. If that's the case, get a neuropsychological assessment for memory so they can tease out which aspects of your memory issues are due to anxiety and which ones are due to frontal executive function problems, ADHD, and/or PTSD. The neuropsychologist will be able to give you cognitive remediation for all these disorders. For more solutions, see Chapter 1 on depression, Chapter 2 on anxiety and PTSD, and Chapter 4 on ADHD. The first solution to trauma to the brain and its effects on memory is to certainly not keep digging it up. Like picking a scab, the more you pick at it, the deeper the scar goes. In addition, trying to remember the traumatic event doesn't necessarily help you heal. It doesn't. Although knowing what happened to you and how it's influenced your brain, mood, and relationships may be comforting and informative, it doesn't give you the skills to avoid making the same choice over and over again. The more you unearth a trauma over a series of years by talking about it or repeating it, like a moth attracted to a flame, you'll become hardwired in your brain to repeat it. The more you talk about the trauma over the course of decades, the stronger the memory traces in your brain and body get, increasing the chance that you will unwittingly and unconsciously find yourself unable to make healthier choices in relationships, finances, and work. You're going to need specialized mind, body, cognitive behavioral, or dialectical behavioral therapy to break the cycle between the trauma, the amygdala, habits, and health. Otherwise, your life script will be a bad soap opera, and your health will let you know you are falling into that dangerous rut again through symptoms of that chronic illness. EMDR can also be helpful for people who have had trauma. Somehow, it may alter how the brain processes memory or painful events. You can use supplements, traditional herbs, and medicines to treat the anxiety, such as ashwagandha, rhodiola, 5-HTP, and others. See Chapter 2. In addition, you might want to consider passionflower or lemon balm to help you get to sleep, not to mention magnesium. Aggressively treat depression, see Chapter 1, with supplements or medicines, as chronic depression can further unhinge the frontal lobe executive function of your brain and make it hard for you to retrieve memory. See the previous case. The affirmations. Louise Hay has written book after book about how a person forgives after being hurt by a mother, a father, a boss, a friend, a sister, a lover, and so on. She says, "I know you want everybody and everything else to change. It doesn't work that way. If you've been hurt in the past and you want to change your life, then you are the one that must do the changing. So, according to Louise, if you want to heal trauma, you can't look back to your family, your friends, or the people who have abused you. And yes, it would be wonderful if they were to apologize, but often a simple apology or a protracted apology doesn't make it better now, does it? It really doesn't. The person who has to do the changing to heal is actually you, the one who was hurt. To heal from a trauma, to clear up your mind so that the pain from the injury isn't reverberating over and over and over again, you have to create the changes in your belief, according to Louise. It's not always easy, however. She says, life is very simple. What we give out, we get back. Our subconscious mind accepts whatever we choose to believe. Remember, we are dealing with thoughts, and thoughts can be changed. When we were children, we learned about ourselves, about our lives, from the reactions of adults around us. So think about it. If you were abused, if you were injured, you're going to think, I'm worthy of being abused. I'm not lovable. You can change that now in the present. That was then, and this is now. Louise goes on. When we grow up, we have a tendency to recreate the emotional environment of our early life. We tend to recreate in our personal relationships those we had with our mother and father. If we were highly criticized as children, then we will seek out those in our adult life who will duplicate this behavior. If we were praised, loved, and encouraged as children, then we will recreate this behavior. Do not blame your parents. She encourages, we are all victims of victims, and somehow they were probably victimized too. They could not teach you something they didn't know. If your mother or father did not know how to love themselves, it would have been impossible for them to teach you how to love yourself. They were coping as best as they could with the information they had. Think about it for a minute. How were they raised? If you want to understand your parents more, I suggest you ask them about their childhoods. Listen to not only what they are telling you, but notice what happens while they are speaking. What is their body language like? As you are doing this, I might add, it does not take away from your own anger. It does not invalidate the pain of your trauma. You can do the exercise of seeing your victimizer's experience and at the same time be present for your own pain, anger, and suffering. That's what the DI is in dialectical behavioral therapy. DI means two, die, two, being able to see two apparently paradoxical perspectives at one time. The innermost belief for everyone is, I'm not good enough. And we all suffer from self-hatred and guilt to one degree or another. These are the problems that all of us struggle with in our lives. If we spend our time blaming others and not taking responsibility for our experiences in the present, we're going to have trouble healing. You can't change your path, but you can change your attitude about the past. What happened to you, past tense. It cannot be changed, but you can change your thoughts about the past, and your reaction to the past, and how it affects how you feel about yourself. And the only road to healing, whether it's brain fog or pain in your body, is through forgiveness. You set the other people free, and you set yourself free. Louise suggests doing the deservability exercise from her mirror work, saying in the mirror, "I am deserving. I deserve all good. Not some, not a little, but all good. I now move past all negative and restricting thoughts. I release and let go of the limitations of my parents. I love them. I go beyond them. I am not their negative opinions or limiting beliefs. I am not bound by any of their fears or prejudice. In my mind, I have total freedom. I now move in a new space of consciousness. The universe is more than willing to manifest my new belief. I accept this abundant life with joy, pleasure, and gratitude, for I am deserving. I accept it. I know it to be free." Part 3. Accidents, concussion, brain injury, and memory. We've been falling on our heads since childhood when we took our first steps. It's a normal function of our brain and body to repair after injury, whether it's a scrape on our knee, a broken bone here or there, or even a mild bang to your head when you fall off the swing set or go over the handlebars of your bike. Your body and brain can be incredibly forgiving after insult or injury, emotional or physical trauma. What makes an injury, a blow to our head, give us problems with memory? A variety of factors, including genetics, our nutritional status, and whether or not we use alcohol or drugs. However, we cannot minimize the influence that our environment or our behavior has on our capacity to come back, rewire our brains, and compensate after injury. Whether we grew up with an intense desire to learn, or were not in an environment where learning was encouraged, whether we had resources such as nutritional supplements, herbs, medicines, and a variety of therapies, the impact that an injury has on the brain isn't the same from one person to another. What is brain injury anyway? In its mildest form, a concussion is a traumatic brain injury in which a sudden force is directed against one's head, face, or neck. Whether it occurs in a car accident, an athletic event, or another injury, there are classical symptoms and signs: a loss of consciousness, irritability, slow reaction times, drowsiness, headache, brain fog, emotional lability are but a few of the symptoms. The symptoms of concussions usually resolve on their own. However, many concussions aren't even recognized as having occurred by the person who is injured. In the United States alone, 1.7 million people have a traumatic injury of one kind or another each year. Most people don't seek medical advice, but for those who do, the total cost of their care in the U.S. alone in the year 2000 was $60 billion. If you're concerned that an injury to your head, be it from slip or fall, an athletic injury, or a car accident, has affected your memory, go to the emergency room immediately after it happens. The doctors and nurses on staff will provide the proper exams and scans and other tests to determine the severity of your injury, not to mention the proper treatment and follow-up. If months later you find you're still not right, having brain fog, memory problems, or other symptoms, consider going to a neurologist and getting a neuropsychological assessment for attention, learning, and memory. Those professionals will be able to take a neuropsychiatric snapshot of how your brain is functioning now to see what the basis is for your memory complaints. Other than the symptoms of concussion that we just described, what are some of the other brain problems one may have after one or more injuries? Many of the symptoms come under the heading of frontal lobe brain area, that area we described in Chapter 4 on learning disorders. As you might recall, the frontal lobe's executive area functions to curb, censor, direct, and organize your temporal lobe's limbic areas for emotion. So, someone who's had perhaps a more extensive brain injury may experience some personality changes, since the frontal lobe and the temporal lobe work together to shape our personality and how we act and behave. Sometimes, after a more extensive brain injury, injury to the frontal lobe removes the usual inhibition that we need to curb impulses, whether it's at work, in relationships, in finances, or in families. Someone who's had a brain injury may impulsively respond to a stray comment with irritability, moodiness, and then depression. Someone who was previously anxious or sensitive may, after brain injury, have exaggerated panic after a seemingly mild scare or in an unfamiliar situation. Someone with a brain injury simply can't stop talking about that terror. They will not just ruminate about it, like someone who's obsessional or compulsive, see Chapter 2, they will perseverate, that is, be unable to get off the topic and keep coming back to it over and over again, no matter how much family members, mates, or colleagues try to change the subject. After brain injury, the frontal lobe break may make it hard for someone to control their temper or their mood. Someone who was previously a more or less even-keeled individual may, after a brain injury, find themselves flying off the handle more easily. Impatient, irritable, you may find yourself flying off the handle if someone cuts you off in traffic, takes too long in front of you in the checkout line, or even makes too much noise. After a traumatic brain injury, the frontal lobe's attention and organizational areas may not work as efficiently. Even if you previously had a lot of motivation and initiative, after a series of concussions or injuries, you might find it hard to be as productive as you used to be, engage with friends and family, in travel, or entertainment. Your body may feel like lead. You may get lost in a morass of details at work and find it hard to organize your job, your shopping, or even plans for a trip. And finally, when it comes to your memory, you may notice, or others may notice even more than you do, that you are not as sharp as you used to be. During a conversation when someone is talking to you, you may remember only a detail here or there from what they've said, while family and friends who are listening at the same time seem to be getting so much more out of the conversation. Unless you take notes or write down what you've heard, if anything is told to you, it goes in one ear and out the other. You simply can't remember it. If you have had any or all of these symptoms, after you've gone for a neuropsychological evaluation, keep listening to the following case study. Don't get discouraged. Brain injury is oh so common, So many famous people who function quite successfully have had bad accidents with this injury, and they have learned all the ways to nourish and supplement their brain to function well. You can too. You can heal your mind even after brain injury to create wholeness with medicine, affirmations, and intuition. Vivian, a blow to the head. Vivian, age 38, called me with concerns about hormones. The intuitive reading. When I looked at Vivian, she seemed like the epitome of health. She never seemed to complain of health problems. Vivian seemed strong, with an indomitable spirit. I wondered why she was even calling me for a reading. The body. When I looked at her head, I immediately understood why. It was like a dense fog. I saw problems with focus, attention, and distractibility. I saw Vivian having problems at work with her judgment. I could just see her spend too much time on a detail that was inconsequential while blowing off the most important part of the project. In addition to having problems with priorities and judgment, Vivian also seemed distracted, so much so that she was having problems finishing projects entirely. Was it because she was having difficulty working in a crowded environment where there was noise and distraction? And although I saw that she was extremely creative, with a strong intellect, I wondered if it was hard for her to access it through this dense fog in her head. Beyond the fog, there were a few musculoskeletal issues in her neck and ribs. Were these athletic injuries? Accidents? The facts. Vivian told me she was very healthy and a runner. And yes, she'd had an injury here or there. She was concerned about getting her hormones stable, but no matter what doctors did, they couldn't balance her estrogen and progesterone. When Vivian didn't immediately talk about brain fog, I instead asked her about whether she'd had any accidents or injuries. She said, "Oh, that's that car accident I had when I was 17, and I was in a coma for 2 weeks." A coma for 2 weeks? "Yes," she said, "I had a fracture in my skull, and the doctors put in a metal plate." She said after that she was fine. I asked her how far she had gone in school. She told me that after the accident, she tried to go back and finish college, but she couldn't. Since that time, she'd had a series of jobs, many of which she'd either been laid off from or left before she could have gotten fired due to some misunderstanding. Vivian said that working in an office was never her thing anyway. She had a tendency of being porous or sensitive and easily distracted in a business office environment. Now she worked for an elderly lawyer and she was able to do her work at home. But lately, at perimenopause, even with these work adaptations, she was finding herself with hormonal issues still not being able to focus. Traumatic brain injury and memory. Whether brain injury is mild, moderate, or severe, two injuries occur in the brain in varying amounts. First, when force is applied to your head, the brain hits the skull and it wiggles around. As the brain wiggles, connections between the brain cells, axons, are stretched to varying degrees and then become disconnected from each other. The process is called diffuse axonal injury, and it may be the cause of so much of what people experience after a concussion. The headaches, the fatigue, the problems with concentration, slow thinking, forgetfulness, dizziness, lightheadedness, depression with insomnia, irritability. On the other hand, in more severe forms of brain injury, more dramatic changes in the structure of the brain take place. Along the pathways in the brain, there are arteries. In more severe brain injury, when those nerve cell pathways get stretched and injured, the arteries also become injured and they bleed. This bleeding can cause inflammation over time, and some people, not all, the inflammation can cause degeneration and memory loss. For a long time, doctors didn't understand the level of brain anatomy changes that occur in the mildest form of brain injury. However, now newer technology, such as diffusion tensor imaging, DTI, and tractography, shows that people with these syndromes actually have abnormalities in these white matter connection pathways. These very subtle changes that occur in mild brain injury may be underlying the symptoms that can occur, including depression, irritability, anxiety, and brain fog. If you have had multiple concussions over time, you need to be especially careful about engaging in athletic events or taking risks that may subject your brain to further injury. In some individuals, if you have multiple concussions over time, you may develop a disorder called chronic traumatic encephalopathy, CTE. In chronic traumatic encephalopathy, one's problem is not merely the blow to the head. After multiple hits to the brain, multiple small concussions, a chronic inflammation occurs along brain pathways. Inflammatory mediators are released. Inflammation can occur months, years, or even decades after the brain injury. These brain changes may affect memory and judgment, cause confusion, and problems controlling impulse, aggression, and even cause dementia. Originally, we thought that CTE was the progressive degenerative disorder that only boxers had. We called it dementia pugilistica because boxers had multiple concussions from being hit in the head. However, now we know that any number of individuals can have CTE. In the National Football League, ice hockey, wrestling, soccer, and so on. Domestic violence is also being investigated in this regard. Interestingly, when you examine the brains of people who have had multiple concussions over time, you may see nerve cell loss or tau protein, as well as beta amyloid and neurofibrillary tangles. These are among the same markers we see in individuals with other dementing disorders such as Alzheimer's disease. As I said earlier, when you've had a brain injury, the first step is to get immediate evaluation and treatment. Go immediately to the hospital emergency room and get the appropriate scan. You want to make sure you don't have the bleeding vessels that are associated with head injuries. But on the other hand, if you do have a brain injury, you want to immediately start to heal your mind with everything available, whether it's nutritional supplements, herbs, medicines, or a variety of healing remedies. You want to consider everything that's available to feel whole again. The supplements. After you've dealt with the emergency situation, it's important that you use nutritional supplements and herbs to help nourish your brain away from the inflammation. Though many of these solutions may be controversial and not fully studied yet, I wouldn't wait till the studies come in. I would talk to my treatment team about taking coenzyme Q10, an anti-inflammatory, 400 to 600 milligrams a day. I would use supplements and medicines, especially antioxidants such as alpha-tocotrienol, a high-potency anti-inflammatory, a baby aspirin a day, but only if your doctor says it's okay, acetyl L-carnitine, 500 milligrams 2 or 3 times a day, which is neuroprotective and also has an antioxidant effect and prevents cell death. CDP choline, 500 to 2,000 milligrams a day, which helps you maintain the building blocks for acetylcholine, the critical memory neurotransmitter. Tomato, potato, or eggplant. Eating these can theoretically increase acetylcholine in your brain. Siberian ginseng, if your blood pressure is normal. 625 milligrams once a day. If you're not worried about bleeding, and if your doctor says it's okay, ginkgo biloba 120 to 240 milligrams a day. To maintain acetylcholine, huperzine A, 60 to 200 micrograms per day. SAM E, but only if you're not using other serotonin medicines. 400 milligrams 2 to 3 times a day on an empty stomach. Otherwise, it doesn't work. A multivitamin that has B6, B12, and folic acid, all of which help your brain make serotonin. They also decrease levels of inflammatory mediator homocysteine. DHA, 1,000 milligrams 3 times a day. Phosphatidylserine, though controversial, 100 to 300 milligrams a day. Other approaches. If you have had brain injury of any kind, I think it's important to reevaluate the state of your brain function. Consider getting a neuropsychological assessment for frontal executive function, attention, learning and memory, especially if your concussion symptoms haven't improved after 6 months. If your memory symptoms have affected your capacity for work and relationships, have the neuropsychologist refer you to appropriate cognitive behavioral therapy, vocational therapy, and other support to help you adapt while you recover from your injury. Also, I would learn. I would put myself in a information-rich environment. I would try to read the newspaper in print or online every day. I emphasize try. You may not feel you are remembering all of it, but right now that's not what's important. What's important is that you are subjecting your brain to literary information and exercising your language circuits. Even if you read one paragraph or two paragraphs a day, or just read the headlines, you are pumping neurons in your brain and exercising your attention and memory circuits. But most important, I would remove myself from an environment where my head was going to get hit. If you are a football player, stop. If you are a soccer player, stop. Right now, we don't have helmets that are going to save your head. If you continue to play the same sport professionally, you are essentially mortgaging your brain for the sake of your bank account. Try meditation and yoga to lower cortisol, the stress neurotransmitter. Use acupuncture to increase cerebral blood flow to areas in your brain. Although controversial, hyperbaric oxygen, a decade ago, was being used by people with traumatic brain injury. This therapy is now used off-label for a variety of scenarios, including Asperger's, autism, and others. New studies suggest that when compared with a placebo, hyperbaric oxygen has little effect. New research is being done, however, showing that soldiers with blast injuries in war may be helped with hyperbaric oxygen. If you've had a moderate to severe brain injury, you want to check your hormone levels of TSH, T4, T3, and other hormones, and especially testosterone, estrogen, and progesterone. A more severe blow to your head could affect the connections between your brain, hypothalamus, and pituitary, making your hormones erratic. And while we're on the subject of hormones, although progesterone has not been considered to be helpful, beta-estradiol and amantadine immediately after an injury has been shown to significantly decrease cell death. So, if you haven't had cancer or if cancer doesn't run in your family, you might want to consider talking to a complementary doctor about whether you are a candidate for these kinds of treatments. What about biofeedback? Believe it or not, biofeedback, that is, working with heart rate variability, has been helpful for people with brain injury, even severe brain injury. These kinds of treatments not only improve social functioning, but have also been shown to improve emotional symptoms. And then there's laser therapy. Some newer research suggests that people with mild brain injury have been helped with lasers, specifically transcranial near-infrared light. Not only does this therapy improve cognitive performance, it helps with frontal lobe function, distractibility, and problems with organization and planning. Is the future now? There are new treatment approaches to brain injury that are being researched now. Scientists are working aggressively on stem cell transplants for brain injury. Then there are the drugs. Some newer drugs that work at the glutamate receptor may be particularly helpful for brain injury, as glutamate may be involved with the inflammation cascade that occurs within the 24 hours after injury. If I had a relative with a traumatic brain injury, I'd have them consider all of these treatments. I suggest acupuncture, Chinese medicine to stop the inflammatory cascade, as well as ginkgo biloba, curcumin, centella asiatica, any of these anti-inflammatory herbs, not to mention the supplements that may stop chronic inflammation that can occur years down the road. I would suggest hyperbaric oxygen. I would have them exercise their brain and body to learn as much as possible so they could use all of their mind for the rest of their life. There is nothing new under the sun. Concussions and brain injury aren't new. Perhaps our awareness of them is. On some level, we can't prevent an accident. We can brace ourselves with seatbelts, but in the end, it's an accident. However, we can buffer our body from the slings and arrows of life, whether nutritional supplements, herbs, or medicines, believing that against adversity, we can be strong and safe. The affirmations. Whether it's an accident or an injury, we may all feel anger believing that an accident or collision, the lack of safe equipment, shouldn't have happened. Things should be different. This is unfair. After the accident, if you've had injuries other than to your brain and memory, maybe the injuries to your spine, legs, and so on, you may be bitter at having nearly lost your life, not to mention losing a certain part of your identity. Whether it's involved in playing a certain sport or having your body and brain be a certain way. In addition to the physical after effects of a brain injury, we have to deal with the depression and bitterness over the fact that life itself has dealt us a bad hand. Louise Hay has a forgiveness checklist that may help you move through the anger and trauma after you've had an accident or incident in which somebody else also was involved in the injury to your body and brain. Statements like, "I'll never forgive them." "What they did was unforgivable. They ruined my life. I don't have to forgive anyone. It's their fault. They did this to me." Though the statement may be true, you may have been hit by that car or by that bullet or by that fist, feeling self-righteous or carrying a grudge year after year isn't therapeutic. Being angry after your injury and carrying that anger for years on end releases inflammatory mediators in your brain and body, and we already know that brain injury in itself involves inflammatory mediators. You don't need to add more on top of that by maintaining in your mind those thoughts, "I'm right, they're wrong, things should be different." Though that stance may be illogical, attaching yourself to the emotion of resentment will only injure your brain and body further, not to mention your memory. Instead, consider working with someone who knows dialectical behavioral therapy. Specifically, ask them to help you learn the skill of radical acceptance, which helps us accept reality the way it is and learn how to handle suffering mindfully. If you are angry after being injured in an accident, a sporting event, or even an abusive situation, get help from a trained professional who is familiar with emotional and physical trauma. If you've had physical abuse in a relationship, the counselor will help you find out what you need to do to become safe. If you've had more severe brain injury rehab units often have counselors that help you deal with the emotional fallout, anger, and frustration from your injury. In addition, Louise Hay suggests using mirror work, especially when we've had trauma where someone has injured us. Look into your eyes in the mirror and say with feeling, "I am willing to forgive." Repeat this several times. What are you feeling? Do you feel stubborn and stuck? Or do you feel open and willing? Just notice your feelings. Don't judge them. Breathe deeply a few times and repeat the exercise. Does it feel any different? Then use the following statements. If you believe, "I'll never forgive them," your affirmation is, "This is a new moment. I am free to let go." If you believe, "They don't deserve to be forgiven," your affirmation is, "I forgive whether they deserve it or not." If you believe, "What they did to me was unforgivable," your affirmation is, "I am willing to let go beyond my limitations." If you believe, "They did it on purpose," your affirmation is, "They were doing the best they could with the knowledge, understanding, and awareness they had at the time." If you believe, "They ruined my life," your affirmation is, "I take responsibility for my own life. I am free." If you believe, "I don't have to forgive anyone," your affirmation is, "I refuse to limit myself. I am always willing to take the next step." Whether it's a small blow or a big blow to your brain or your psyche, say to yourself in the mirror, "I give myself permission to let go." Part 4, Memory Disorders, Alzheimer's Disease, and Other Dementias. There is hope. Have you noticed a progressive lessening of your ability to remember things? Have you become less alert, less able to handle the anxiety, stress, and sadness in your daily life? In some cases, a progressive decline in your memory that has a great effect on your daily life can be Alzheimer's disease. But there are many other reversible causes of memory loss that can cause the same symptoms. Please make sure you listen to the first three sections in this chapter before you come to the conclusion that your memory problems may be Alzheimer's disease. Alzheimer's disease is a gradual loss of several abilities in your brain, not just memory. Whether it's problems with attention, language, or your ability to orient yourself, use judgment, have insight, and make decisions, memory is the symptom most people think about when they worry about Alzheimer's disease. However, there are other forms of dementia. Lewy body dementia, progressive supranuclear palsy, Parkinson's disease, not to mention other neurodegenerative disorders, can all cause one to have a loss of brain function over time. Many people who find their attention and memory slipping may not have dementia at all. Their memory problems may be due to any of a host of reversible disorders, physical and chemical disorders in their brains and bodies, including Lyme, herpes zoster, HIV, cancers, lupus, and other infectious diseases can all cause a brain fog. When your immune system is activated, it creates inflammation molecules like IL-1, IL-6, tumor necrosa factor alpha, and others that gum up the memory apparatus. In this case, your problem with memory can be reversible, and if your illness is treated, you can regain your attention, focus, and memory. Nutrition, metabolic, and other toxic disorders, alcohol, pain meds, often can cloud one's brain. B12 deficiency, liver disorders, thyroid problems, adrenal gland, cortisol problems, and exposure to heavy metals can shuffle the brain's chemistry, cloud consciousness, and make it hard for you to access memory. Heart disease and blood vessel problems. If a person has had a stroke, hypertension, and even recent surgery for correcting clogged arteries, we can have a loss of memory. Parasites and infections in the brain can also create an immune disorder that disrupts memory. If you are having problems with brain fog and fatigue, it's really important to have a full medical workup to rule out reversible causes of memory loss. Let's say you are particularly concerned about Alzheimer's disease or other dementias because a parent or other close relative developed that disorder. If so, the first thing you'll want to do is go to a neurologist and have them evaluate you for any and all causes of memory problems. Neurologists have a variety of diagnostic instruments fine-tuned to pick up whether or not your memory symptoms may be caused by a neurodegenerative disorder like Alzheimer's disease or other forms of dementia. However, caution. If you are a particularly intellectually gifted and/or have had a lot of education, your memory symptoms may not be picked up by these tests. Why? With years of intellectual enrichment, you may have built-in brain circuits that compensate for and cover up your memory symptoms. So, standard tests are not going to pick up those subtle symptoms of memory loss that you know you're really occurring. If this is you, you will notice that perhaps it's taking oh so much longer to do the New York Times crossword puzzle in ink, or when it comes to preparing four people's tax returns in a weekend, you find you're not as sharp as you used to be. Normal testing will think you're being too hard on yourself or making excessive demands. With such a high ceiling effect and how you've trained your brain to perform, it might be better that you go to a neuropsychologist and have them give you a full-scale neuropsychological evaluation, commensurate with your education and career. A skilled, board-certified neuropsychologist will be able to, more or less, interpret to what degree your memory may have slipped. In the meantime, with help from a friend or loved one, consider the following statements. In addition to having problems with your memory, you have a consistent problem with your memory and your thinking. You have problems remembering recent events, like what you had for dinner the night before or what you did last weekend. You have trouble remembering a short shopping list. Your memory has especially gone downhill in the last year. A partner or family member is also concerned about your memory. You have recently forgotten a major event, like a party, wedding, or trip, within a few weeks of the event. You have trouble remembering important information about your past, such as your wedding date, your place of employment, and so on. Your memory problems are making it hard for you to do your work. Your memory problems may have cost you your job or forced you to retire. If many of these statements seem to fit your experience, then in addition to using the solutions in this audiobook, it's very important that you create a team, not just to help you find the source of your memory problems, but to support you day to day. In addition to nutritional supplements, herbs, medicines, and a host of other therapies, you may for the time being need a variety of people to help make sure you're effectively and safely keeping track of the details of your life, whether it's handling finances, responding